Buongiorno and welcome to the Red Phone Zone. I am your intrepid host, Aaron. And with me, as always, is Ethan. Say hello, Ethan.
Hello, Ethan.
Haha, you're so fucking funny. As you guys know, now we go ahead and we guest host in some people. Tonight, we have a guest host by the name of John. Say hello, John.
Hello, John. And, you know, it's funny. In my circles, I'm never the other John. And now on the Red Phone Zone, I'm the other John.
That's true. Yeah. We do have John Weatherwax.
We have John Weatherwax from Bag and Board. Now we've got Mr. John Hook. So, and yeah. We've had a couple other Johns, or are going to have some more Johns on. So.
That's very cool.
We have lots of Johns.
We have lots of Johns.
Wow, taken out of context. That is really bad.
I have lots of Johns.
We have lots of Johns.
Super sexy.
Yes,
right. Super mm-hmm. sexy. As you know, I'm not going to go into a long explanation as we normally do, but we talk movie genres on this show. This time around, we're going to be discussing the sci-fi movie genre again, but this time as a whole. Yes. Before we have done pre-Star Wars and post-Star Wars, now we're just looking at everything all together. And after we're done with our next segment, we're going to go into why we did that. But like I like to say on all of our shows, before we do any of that, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. When we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. And opening it up, there's not a hell of a lot of news this week.
Yeah, real slow news week this time, you know, so the...
Let's talk Batman.
Geekly Happenings won't last like
Batman.
9 million hours again.
Screw you and your segues. Let's talk Batman, Batman Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
Photos and stuff.
Okay, okay. I got it down to a Dark Knight Rises set photo taken during the first official day of filming from the set of Jodhpur, India. Apparently shows a pool of green that is believed to be a CGI replaced by a CGI Lazarus pit, especially since Josh Pence will be playing young Ra's al Ghul in The Dark Knight Rises, has been spotted on the set.
John Hook, how familiar are you with the Batman mythos?
Pretty familiar. I absolutely love Neil Adams' run on Batman, and it sounds like they're really tapping into that source material for this upcoming movie. If what I hear is true, where Talia is going to be in it, and
it
if you're going to bring in the
like
Lazarus
it.
Pit, oh my god!
Now I got to ask a question that's going to sound like I'm demeaning you, but just take it to where I'm just getting it out there. You have seen Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Our buddies over at the Bag and Board cast do not think that the Lazarus Pit is going to be appropriate for the Nolan universe. Would you care to comment on that?
I think the Lazarus Pit is absolutely appropriate for the Nolan universe, mainly because it's one of the few elements that is more mystical. And I think that can work, especially when, you know, because Nolan went through a lot of pains to make it and introduce Eastern philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I think it will absolutely be believable that this is something, you know, hidden away deep in darkest Tibet that they could find this Lazarus Pit. I think it works.
See, Ethan? I think if it is a Lazarus Pit, hasn't been confirmed that it's a Lazarus Pit from anyone at the studio, from anyone with
really
the production.
Really looks like it.
Yeah, but it could be anything.
No, you're right. It could be a well.
It could be a well. It could be a big, dark, deep pit that it's supposed to be, but we just don't know.
A big vagina. We
don't
know.
If it is a Lazarus Pit, I could see it as being something not exactly like it is from the comics, but something like it's a it's like a clone of Ra's al Ghul or something like that, and it's
a clone?
This is the solution he has to be in. I don't know, but ultimately none of us know.
And
actually, it's not a bad point because you know in other movies, cloning has been brought up and always been believable by the audiences. And cloning always, for some reason, always entails giant pools of viscous fluid.
And they could just call it it's the Lazarus Pit. And,
now,
you know. The young Ra's al Ghul comes crawling out of it, you know.
Okay, now we're going to get into, you know, the and it's a world that I promised to never get into, but screw that. You know, that was a year ago when I said that. And it's pure speculation at this point.
Yeah.
But there has been a couple of different scenes that have been viewed by people that were spying on it. Number one would be a young, bald male actor coming out of that that CGI effect, and he was reacting as if, you know, bad stuff was happening to him, which would be indicative of the Lazarus Pit.
Mm-hmm.
Young bald actor boy has been confirmed as a young Bane. So we have that. Plus, yeah. We've seen Joss Pence in the same scene, who has been confirmed as a young Ra's al Ghul. So we got that much going for us, which is fine. I think that if it's a Lazarus Pit, and I think it probably is, I think it's going to be a Nolan-esque Lazarus Pit, meaning it's not a big glowing green pool that brings people back to life. It's going to have some sort of real-world element added to it, which is fine. Obviously, Nolan was very successful with like taking stuff that's pretty unbelievable, like, you know, the Joker, and putting a real-world spin on it and making it believable for us.
Mm-hmm.
The part that was making my ears bleed was the scene where they showed, once again, this is pure speculation, and it was something that was seen, and we can't substantiate it at all,
right.
But there was a scene of a hooded character carrying Christian Bale into, you know, said CGI effect, or the Lazarus Pit, or the, you know, the well, or whatever it's going to be, which I'm having trouble getting my head around, because, you know, with the original one, the young actor and Joss Pence, meaning in the past, this time around we got, you know, Christian Bale, which lends itself to, at the very least, you know, the end of Bruce Wayne's training to present day, and I don't know how that's going to fit in at all.
Yeah, you see, and I'm not really putting a lot of merit on these.
There's the pictures of it, though, dude.
Well, they're not. One, they're not clear pictures. Two, the only pictures I've seen have been absolute crap.
Of the pit?
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't know. You can't really trust a lot of quote-unquote eyewitness reports from the set like that. I mean, you're talking unconfirmed.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Unconfirmed sources here. And so,
if they do, okay, let me.
And we all know the internet is 99% BS,
mm-hmm.
or bullshit, as the case may be, really.
As far as I'm concerned.
No.
I know. Most of what you read on the internet is false, apparently.
Any Ra's al Ghul, anything that they do is good by me. I love Ra's al Ghul. I love me some Batman, and I love Ra's al Ghul. So, I mean, I don't care at this stage, you know, I just want more Ra's al Ghul. I don't care. I mean, plain and simple. But what else do we go
Batman's,
ahead?
Batman's, I think, between Joker and Ra's al Ghul, best villains period for Batman. Mm-hmm.
Sure,
we did. Yeah. Aaron is kind of fond of Ra's al Ghul.
No, so. I very 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 fond.
Only
of
slightly.
But we did. I think it was issue 2, issue 3 of our show. We did top 6 Batman villains, and all those guys were pretty high up on our list. I think my number one was Joe Cool. But I was going from a different point of view. I was just, you know, like important Batman villains versus my favorite. But, you know, that's the most recent
sure.
photo, and that's a lot better than that aerial one. And that very much looks
it
like something.
Could still be anything.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. But, you know, we've speculated on this quite a bit. Do you want to talk about the $66 million that Thor made, Ethan?
Yeah, Thor hammered the box office, quote unquote, this last weekend, I know. hit with an estimated $66 million at about 4,000 venues, including a record of 2,737 3D locations.
I know that we sold about 6 of those ourselves.
Yes. It is the third largest opening for Marvel superhero franchise, trailing only Spider-Man and Iron Man. So this outdid both Marvel.
Did Iron Man 2?
Mm-hmm. It outdid Iron Man 2, apparently.
Bullshit.
This is what the article says, dude.
It can't be right.
It's the third best opening ever for a new Marvel Studio franchise, trailing only Spider-Man and Iron Man. 3D locations accounted for 60% of Thor's debut total. Thor ranked behind the opening weekends for the first films in the Hulk, X-Men, and Fantastic Four franchises, but ahead of Daredevil and Ghost Rider, which, you know, isn't really any big surprise. So yeah, Thor came out the gate with $66 million. It's honestly a little disappointing, but disappointing to some. But it unseated Fast Five, which opened the week before at about $88 million, something like that. Now and it tanked down to about $32 million this last weekend. So,
Iron Man 2 grossed $128 million opening.
I got nothing. I'm just going off the article.
Yeah, so. Well, yeah. The way
it,
I was
it might be like opening day type of
yeah.
thing. I don't know really what
But the way I was understanding is pretty much it was like kind of like the bottom of like those really those really successful Marvel releases, mm-hmm. and you know, it surpassed stuff like, you know, Elektra and Daredevil, stuff like that. So it was we both saw it. We both liked it.
We'll see if it has staying power over this next week.
Yeah.
The only other Pirates sort, quote unquote, big movie is Hangover 2 coming out this next weekend?
No, it comes out the 26th.
Okay,
28th.
So I think the only thing coming out this weekend.
Pirates 4, isn't it?
No, it's not for another 2 weeks. Oh. That's a week from this Friday. This Friday, the only geek release is going to be Priest.
Fuck that. So I don't care about Priest.
I'm going to see it, but I don't think it's going to. I don't think it'll be Thor.
It's not going to hit $66 million.
No. And speaking as a guy who saw Thor, I'd go see it again. I don't think I'd rush to go see it in 3D.
I wouldn't see it.
I'd save the money, but I wouldn't mind seeing it again. I enjoyed it that much. It was fun.
I'll more than likely buy it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't rush. I don't want to spend $16 on a ticket mm-hmm. to see it again, which is what ended up happening this weekend.
Well, so. Let's see. More news I have is the Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Oeming story Powers. Was picked up last February by FX. Pilot was picked up. I have not read the Powers comic or anything like that. They've cast Charles Dutton as Captain Gross in the pilot. Look up a picture of him. You'll recognize him immediately.
Charles Gross?
Charles Dutton.
Dutton. Are you asking me to look up Charles Dutton?
Dutton.
I don't need to look him up. I know who he is.
Okay.
You're looking
I thought you said, who was that?
I know who Charles Dutton is.
Okay, that's good to know.
Okay, sorry. I thought... No, okay. No, I said, who is he playing?
Have another beer.
I said, who is he playing?
Yes, have another beer.
I said, who is he playing?
He's playing Captain Cross. Excuse me. Captain Cross, an FX pilot. So, I don't really know anything about Powers, the comic book. So, you know, honestly, I do know this is sort of on the heels. Fox canceled this week. Fox this week canceled, not FX, but Fox canceled Human Target, which isn't surprising because it kind of sucked. But, I think FX has a history of some good shows. I mean, I love The Shield. Shield and, Sons of Anarchy are very, very good shows. So we'll see what they do with it. I might have to check out the whole Powers comic. Plus, we talked a bit of about Akira of late.
Uh-huh.
Keanu
Reeves.
Yes. Drawing even more ire from various groups is Keanu Reeves is now in talks to play the lead of Kaneda in the big studio live-action remake of Akira from a two-film adaptation to be directed by the Hughes brothers.
It's been a while since I've seen Akira, but I had an impression he was younger. Am I wrong?
Your impression would be correct.
Okay, good. I mean, I bet I haven't seen that in 10 years.
With all the changes that they're making, setting it in New York, you know, not hiring any Japanese actors, why are they even calling it Akira? Why don't they just call it something else, and it could be an Akira ripoff, and then let a authentic Japanese film studio do it justice and have them make a like how Sony Pictures did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Mm-hmm. Put those people on board and have them do Akira.
Maybe. Yeah. I was never a big fan of the anime Akira. I'm not a big anime fan in general, and I've never read any of the comics. Though from what I understand, the anime basically took you had say 10 books of Akira. They basically went, let's make a movie and use book 1, 5, and 10. And that's why it really, you know, didn't make sense. If Reeves gets the role, as we previously talked about, they were also talking to Robert Pattinson, Andrew Garfield, James McAvoy, Garrett Hedlund, Michael Fassbender, Chris Penn, Justin Timberlake, and Joaquin Phoenix.
Can you imagine the ire if Robert Pattinson was cast?
Oh yeah, that would. Oh my God. I would want him to be cast
worth it to see that reaction.
Akira would sparkle.
Uh-huh.
Sparkle, yeah. Akira.
Yeah. So there's that.
Poor Robert Pattinson. He doesn't deserve all the shit he gets, honestly. I mean, he did one stupid franchise, and it's tainting him.
Mm-hmm. And I have two more small stories to talk about. The Ian McKellen himself confirmed, I didn't know this hadn't been confirmed officially, but apparently it has been now by Ian McKellen, that Hugo Weaving is back in The Hobbit as will return as Elrond, although I can't imagine he's going to be too big of a part.
Elrond had a somewhat significant role.
It has been over a decade since I read the book. So, he also said, reported that Martin Freeman has obviously left the set and whatnot because he's off to go film three more Sherlock TV episodes for the BBC, but will be back, obviously, once he's done with that to continue on as Bilbo.
Mm-hmm.
And they had someone leave the cast recently. I can't remember his name. They announced his
replacement. Guy playing Bulfer, and I don't remember who's replacing him.
Yeah,
I don't remember who was originally playing him. I don't remember who is replacing him, but it's Bulfer.
So essentially, filming is going on, working on the Hobbitless sections of the film. So, but Hugo Weaving, Red Skull himself, is back as Lord Elrond.
Neat.
The other thing I saw, and I'm sort of stretching for news at this point. Barry Sonnenfeld and producer Arnold Rifkin and Liquid Comics are developing Dominion, Dinosaurs versus Aliens for film and graphic novels. So both the film and the comics will be written by Grant Morrison. Anyway, the concept features an alien invasion of Earth millions of years ago with super intelligent dinosaurs fighting back.
Sounds kind of.
It sounds badass, but could be really bad.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
this is Barry Sonnenfeld. He has a relatively
okay track record. Can't the aliens just hover over the dinosaurs and just bombard them?
Yeah, it's the whole no opposable thumbs thing.
That fucks shit up sometimes.
So that, you know, obviously, since the cowboys are obviously going to kick their ass, now the dinosaurs have to have a go. I'm thinking after this, we'll have ninjas versus aliens, pirates versus aliens at some point. So. Well, we've had Jedi versus aliens. I mean, that's Star Wars in general.
Shut up.
I only spotted two new trailers this week. There's a new trailer for Conan the Barbarian.
I say meh. Yeah. But what's going record? We are in front of microphones.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan and I are on record with the show of, like, you know, talking a pretty big smack on Jason Momoa.
Yeah, the early pictures they released to him were not
horrible.
Good.
I want to go on the record saying that I think he looks great. The movie looks horrible. He looks like he's going to look the part of Conan very well, very good.
I'm a huge Conan fan.
Not me.
I'm going to see it one way or another.
Marcus Mispel.
But I'm very much going with very low expectations.
I'm a huge Conan fan. I love the Robert E. Howard stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that they're not going to do justice with this movie. I think the movie will be helped by Jason's appearance on Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Is he on Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Cool.
Watched that yet.
I don't even know. I mean, I haven't read that yet, but I've heard good things about it. I'm going to get it there.
Game of Thrones on HBO is fucking awesome.
Cool.
And I think his appearance on that show is going to help bolster the Conan movie, but I don't know. I think it's still going to suck. I'm going to see it because I'm a huge Conan fan, but yeah. It's not going to do well.
I hope it's the greatest movie ever made.
At the very least, I'm hoping Rachel Nichols to be scantily clad throughout the whole movie, and then that'll get me nice and distracted. So.
Although I did see a whole bunch of like nerd fist pumping when it was officially announced that it was rated R.
Yeah,
which it should.
Well, yes, Conan should be. Yes,
it should be. But there was pretty serious talk about it being PG-13.
And speaking of Conan, one of my favorite Conan stories is called Red Nails. Okay. Years ago, they were working on a direct-to-DVD animated version of it with Ron Perlman as the voice of Conan and all this other stuff. And it's sort of been in development hell for – it was supposed to come out, I think, in, like, 2006.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposed to come out in 2006 and is still not there. So if you do a search for Red Nails, it'll pop up as still out there, and they have production stills from it and stuff like that. And – but it's God only knows if it's ever going to come out. And I'm just saying that because I'd like to see a good movie version of that would be nice. The other trailer that came out is the new full trailer for Real Steel. This movie
Rock'em
just boggles
Sock'em
my
robots.
Rock'em Sock'em Robots, Rocky with robots in it. And they're already talking a sequel for it and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
That's preemptive.
And, I mean,
it looks so stupid.
It might
be fun.
No, I don't even have an opinion on it because I'm like, so what? Huh?
That movie is all it's going to do is spawn toys.
Yeah.
That's all it was designed to do, spawn robot fighting toys. Not that's a bad thing.
No, I got nothing. If I want to see giant robots beating the crap out of each other, we already got Transformers 3 coming out this year, so that will fill that void for me just fine.
I don't care about that. Be with me.
Yeah, that's about all I got, really.
I just saw something today, newsworthy. Fox has turned down the pilot, and they didn't even want to see the pilot. They turned down the offer or the request to make a pilot for Lock and Key from Drill
really?
Hill.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I do know. Yeah. I did see that they were considering the Wonder Woman pilot. Sadly enough, but
Wonder Woman got picked up.
Wonder Woman
got picked up.
Alrighty then.
So we're gonna have 12 episodes of that at the minimum.
Okay.
I don't like what I see, but it might be the greatest TV show ever made.
Might be.
I really doubt it.
Oh well.
And I guys, you need to understand that I'm looking at IMDb right now, and the top news story is Midnight in Paris could be Woody Allen's return to the trip of the Oscars. So the top news is Woody Allen might be nominated for an Oscar. So we're really stretching.
Yeah.
More news tonight.
Not a lot of geek news this week.
Which is good, because sometimes news is bad.
Well, you know, it's all build up for the summer. I mean, all the news coming in is build up for, obviously, the summer hit, and now they're all sitting back and waiting for see how Thor does.
We don't want to talk about Schwarzenegger and Shriver.
I don't care. He's already doing the Governator for crying.
He'll be Bach.
He'll be Bach, and he's going to do Terminator 73 or something.
Sure. I, it's sad. Nobody's ever been divorced ever.
No.
But, you know, shit happens.
They're separated.
They're going to get a fucking divorce.
But I really don't care.
I don't. I wish they would stay together, because I'd like everybody to be happy. Speaking of everybody being happy, we are going to be moving on from this geekly happenings noise, and we're going to be talking about the sci-fi movie genre in a nutshell, overall, and what we think of it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back. At this point, we're going to be getting into the just kind of open-ended discussion where we talk about the sci-fi movie genre as a whole. I've been kind of opening up the segment every time we do it, where I just ask our guests, why did you choose sci-fi, and why is this genre important to you? What do you got to say about it, John?
Well, I chose sci-fi after listening to some of the previous episodes, and I really wanted to cover what I think are essential sci-fi.
Okay.
So my list is comprised of movies that I think every sci-fi fan should watch, and there's a certain reason for each one. Maybe it's the special effects, or the type of story, or, you know, the impact that it had on future, you know, subsequent sci-fi films, that kind of thing. So that's what I tried to shape my list around.
And I think that Ethan and I might be at an extreme disadvantage having done this twice. I built my list...
Well, more or less twice. I mean, we did pre-Star Wars and post-Star Wars.
And not to mention the 150,000 other times we've done top six where...
Yeah, that's true.
...where sci-fi could show up in there.
Yeah.
I tried to build mine off of stuff that's never shown up in my list before. I'm not going to promise it hasn't shown up in other lists.
And I sort of tackled this a lot like I did the horror thing, is I sort of went with basically game changers, basically movies that came out that changed the science fiction film genre. That's sort of how I decided to approach this one, just to make it a little bit different. So it's a little similar to how John's doing it. But I mean, it's movies that are like, this is an essential, you know, an essential piece of science fiction history, whether good or bad, it changed things. And we've talked about Mythbuster or
Mythbusters.
You're talking Mythbusters over here.
I'm typing Mythbusters. Thank you.
We've talked science fiction before, and you know, I think science fiction is just a fun genre in and of itself. I mean, it crosses a lot of boundaries. It makes a lot of commentaries on not only society but you know, people in society, and a lot of times it's just a fun genre to watch.
Now,
so.
Have you been able to catch any of those ones that Chris McLaughlin? I haven't.
Not yet. No.
Damn, I want to see some of those. Sound really interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, that's where I'm sort of coming from on this list.
And mine. I hate to put it this way, but I just grab sci-fi movies that I've seen before that I haven't hated, because, you know, I was really stretching the limit with the two that we've done in the past, but it'll be interesting, so why don't we just get moving on it? Are you guys ready for that, or have you talked enough about it?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go. Ethan, what's your number six?
All right. Well, my number six is a movie that obviously changed things. It is 1993's Jurassic Park, directed by Steven Spielberg.
It's my number six also.
Yeah, well, there you go. It is a movie that was such a mind blower as far as, special effects. I mean, it was usual Steven Spielberg fare. But it really, it was a huge movie at the time because the special effects were just so amazing.
Yeah.
And it was one of those steps in the direction of this, photorealistic special effects that, that, you know, we see nowadays. I mean, it's a movie that pioneered a lot of great stuff. And it's a movie I also ended up seeing six times in theaters. Great movie.
I'm sorry.
It has records when I saw eight times in theaters. I saw Batman six times. I saw this one eight times.
At one point when you and I were talking, Jurassic Park was a movie you saw the most in the theater.
It still
does
is.
Does that still stand? Okay. Yeah. My record is still The Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. 19 times.
Damn, boy.
All right. I saw it.
He's a glutton for punishment. What can you say?
I liked it. Fuck you.
No, I enjoyed it, too. All right, John, what is your number six?
My number six is Jason and the Argonauts, 1963.
I love that movie.
Directed by Don Chaffee. I chose this movie because of special effects. One of Ray Harryhausen's mm-hmm. Paramount stop-motion animation films.
I think about that movie, and the first and two things come to mind. One is the scene, them fighting the skeletons, obviously.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the other one, them fighting the giant statue. Movie, I saw that movie when I was a kid, and I look back now, and it blows my mind that it was made in the 60s, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I said I thought it was made in the late 70s.
No, 60s.
Nope. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans, which was 81.
Yep.
Yeah. That movie's great. I mean,
I used to own it. Got stolen.
Well, yeah, there you go. But Jason and the Argonauts, great movie. It has, I mean, special effects of the time are just phenomenal. And I shudder to think them possibly remaking that one.
They are.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
No, they are. It's Marcus Nispel. He's doing it after
God.
He's done with Conan.
I hope he
Conan
has a
Conan
embolism and dies. I love Jason and the Argonauts. Why did you end up choosing Jason and the Argonauts? That's for the special effects, John?
Special effects. Again, my list is comprised of essential sci-fi, and I think any sci-fi fan really needs to be exposed to Jason and the Argonauts to see what cutting edge special effects were in that period.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Harryhausen,
God.
Oh yeah.
He opened up doors for.
I don't think so.
Harryhausen?
I think he's still kicking.
Barely, but I believe you're right. Go, keep talking, and I will look it up.
I just had to kick Aaron in the balls on the chat room.
That's all right. I have a girlfriend.
But yeah, Jason the Argonaut, special effects, really, Ray Harryhausen. In fact, when I was in high school, I did a paper on Ray Harryhausen. So, mm-hmm. Got an A on it. So that was a lot of fun.
Ray Harryhausen is unquestionably one of the one of those guys in film medium that you can just point at and go, yeah, he changed how things were done. He changed how we saw movies. He saw all of that. I mean, he's just one of those guys that did movies, has done movies. I don't have a count with how many special effects movies he did, but I mean, the work he did on all of his movies was amazing.
Well, that's one of them. He did the work
Valley
on the
Guanji a lot. Sorry.
Say that again?
I like the Valley of the Guanji quite a bit.
He's still alive.
That was an interesting movie. Yeah, he was born in 1920. He's still living. I know he's very old.
Wow.
Yeah, very old.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He did
special effects on King Kong.
He'll be 91 next month.
Except for just Sinbad.
Yeah, he'll be 91 next month. Yep. Yep. So, yeah, and obviously the number 6 for you, Aaron, was Jurassic Park.
Now, do I hit my number? Yeah, we skipped me, and we're going to move right on to your number 5.
My number 5 is another game changer. I mean, obviously all of mine are, and it's a movie that came out only in 2009, and it's Avatar. Not only did I enjoy the movie, but no one can argue that the special effects in that didn't change the face of movie making.
Change, I mean, yes, for the better. We'll have to wait and see.
We'll wait and see. I thought the 3D in that was amazing. James Cameron, of course, it's 2009, directed by James Cameron. It is James Cameron is always pushing the envelope when it comes to visual effects. And you know, his name came up numerous times in our previous sci-fi episode.
And
he's a guy that always says, you know, I think once we have the technology to do this, let's do this. Yeah. You know, all things aside about Avatar, it technically speaking, it is just a gorgeous movie, and the effects in it are absolutely breathtaking.
I borrowed that Blu-ray from you.
The effects are breathtaking. The movie is boring.
Thank you for that, John, J-O-N, because I watched it, and I cannot stress enough how much I'm trying to be positive about this movie. I did a review, I think it was issue 1 of the Red Phone Zone before Ethan joined, where I
remember.
More or less said that it was a good movie that was overhyped, and I have been taking shit for it ever since. I had only seen it once. I borrowed the movie from Ethan. I watched it again, and I actually liked it less than I liked it the first time.
I've only seen it once in the theater, and I was only willing to watch it in 2D because 3D makes me go crazy. In fact, I saw Thor in 2D, and I don't even own it yet. I will probably wait for it to be in a $5 bargain bin before I buy it.
And the effects are cool, and I got into a big argument with my girlfriend over it because I said, fuck the tree. And, like, you know, they can grow a new one. And I was trying to be funny.
And whatever you do, don't talk about nuking them or the computer will die.
I get it. It's a nice movie.
Yeah.
I think it's probably one of Cameron's weakest, but saying that with James Cameron, he's made some good movies.
Yeah.
And his weakest is better than, like, Marcus Nispel's far best.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate Avatar. I'm glad people love it as much as they do, but didn't do it for me.
And really, my love for it stems from the technical aspects of it, because I love the behind-the-scenes stuff and basically just the technical achievement of making the movie. Because it's pretty much, it's Dances with Wolves, it's Pocahontas, it's all that stuff. But that I really don't care about. It was just a visually stunning movie.
Sure.
And that's why I was, when I watched the movie, I found it entertaining. I've only seen it once.
I don't want to see you haven't watched your damn DVD?
Nope, not yet. I just watched the extra features.
Huh. Those are great.
The extra features on that disc are awesome.
Man, they're a glutton for punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
It's just amazing the technology that he developed for it. And I just remember seeing that movie and going, this is a movie that you need to own on Blu-ray. This is a neat movie that you need to have in HD because it is that beautiful.
It makes me, when I was watching it, I wished I'd had a home 3D system.
Mm-hmm.
In so much as I would like to see it again, not so much to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
And it was the first time I saw a 3D movie that 3D was an element in the movie.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just a kitsch in the film. This one, ooh, hey, nifty, look what we got. It actually was a part of the movie. I mean, it actually did something. They worked in layers, and it was just an amazing technical achievement. And that's why it's number five on my list.
Very colorful movie.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it.
So enough of me about me gushing about Avatar. John, what's your number five?
My number five is Forbidden Planet, 1956.
I love that movie.
The show's not quite a bit.
Directed by Fred Wilcox. I love this movie mainly because this is the first sci-fi film that took place 100% off of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely on an alien world and on a spaceship.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Well, I read it when I was doing the research on this, so I know it's.
You do research? Whoa.
Shit.
the reason why I this one I think is an essential film, because the story is, it's 1956. It doesn't really have a great depth of story. But the reason why I think it's an essential is Robbie the Robot. This mm-hmm. is the first appearance of Robbie the Robot with the name Robbie the Robot. This was a real sci-fi or special effects leap where he didn't look like, they had robots where all they did in previous films where they had a gorilla suit and they stuck a diver's helmet on it and called it a robot, and there were some really
or put
really
a guy in a monkey suit and gave him a fish helmet.
Granted, there have been other, even older films that had good robots in them, but not a lot. And really, Robbie the Robot was the first robot that had personality.
Mm-hmm.
It spoke. It really seemed like a complex tool that could have really been in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And people will see posters and whatnot, but they, new fans nowadays of sci-fi, kids mm-hmm. that are growing up in the 2000s and, in the 90s and whatnot, and they've never been exposed to Robbie the Robot. So I think Forbidden Planet is something that should be seen by every sci-fi fan.
And I haven't seen it since I was a teenager, early 20s.
It's a movie that I feel ashamed that I don't own on Blu-ray.
Is it out on Blu-ray?
It is out on Blu-ray.
Sweet.
It actually comes across really well as a good military sci-fi movie, mm-hmm. too.
Well, and even that it's you could look at it as sort of a precursor to the whole Star Trek type of thing. You have this crew on this ship that goes to this planet and discovers some mad scientist on it they have to deal with, and then, all is done, I honestly didn't know that it was the first movie to be all off of Earth. I thought that that's fantastic.
If it is, I'd be surprised, but it's probably very it's probably like the most prominent movie that takes place entirely off of Earth. I don't know, but it seems like I think that showed up on my pre-Star Wars
list. Yeah, probably. Yeah, there's like number 8 or something like that.
Like that. And
it also dates back to a time when writers were, it's 56, so when writers were writing sci-fi films, they really thought the audience wouldn't understand it unless the plot involved scientists. Mm-hmm. In all these old sci-fi films, every one of them has scientists as a core element in it.
Well,
they go to this weird planet and it's a mad scientist.
Yeah, it's part of the atomic age of that period is a lot of people saw scientists as the big boogeyman sitting in the room, and they came up with the atomic bomb, and that's sort of what's threatening them with annihilation. So of course scientists in the movies at the time, especially with science fiction, came in, and they were either, doing things for the good of mankind, or they were doing sinister things, mm-hmm. And Forbidden Planet is one of those movies. I think it should be required viewing for
everybody
living
that breathes.
Exactly. And even ones that don't, they should prop up dead people and make them watch it. They keep trying to make a remake of it, and that just infuriates me in that
it could be done. but it would have to be done with a lot of love.
With our luck, it would be the Forbidden Planet remake directed by Roland Emmerich, and with, I would have to assassinate someone.
Well, produced by Roland Emmerich, directed by Marcus Nispel.
What is with you in this whole...
Fucking hate him!
Okay.
That's why.
We could go one step beyond, say, directed by Uwe Boll.
Uwe.
Uwe, who gives a rat's...
Sure,
anyway.
Patuti.
I love Forbidden Planet, dude. That's a grand movie.
I really digged it, but it was been a while.
Sure. All right, well, Aaron, what is your number five?
It's one that showed up on one of your lists before, and I was kicking myself in the nutsack for not bringing it up because I enjoyed it as much. It's the 1985 Robert Zemeckis film of Back to the Future.
I love that movie,
I do, too. And a lot of people...
It's one of those movies you don't get a lot of anymore that's just fun. Fun to watch.
Oh, it's great.
A lot of people like to attack chapters of it. I enjoy it as a whole, as a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to pick it, I would say I like the original the best, and then the third, and then the second. I really liked a lot of stuff about the third, and don't take that to mean I didn't enjoy the second. I did quite a bit. Like the whole bit with the Jaws hologram. Oh man, the shark still looks fake. This movie, it's important to us 30-year-olds, us 40-year-olds, mm-hmm. us people that remember when it came. And 1985, I was in fucking kindergarten, mm-hmm. but I remember this movie coming out, and it was a gigantic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of, and I'm not gonna say it was one of the first, but it was one of the first movies that I recall. Where they filmed, like, the second and third one on top of each other sequence.
Yep, they filmed back-to-back.
Back-to-back, and I think mm-hmm. they came out, like, 6 months apart, something like that. Yep.
Something like that,
That's a very standard thing these days. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was unheard of.
At the end of number two, there was a preview for number three.
And, man, I like number three, and I feel like I should be, my movie fan card should be taken away for that, but... I like mm-hmm. number three a lot, and I love number one.
They're all fun movies. Number three is a great one. And don't get me wrong, I would also agree as one, three, and two are in order of preference.
And I'm going to say the Back to the Future trilogy is my number six. Call it a cop out. Fuck you in the ass. I like all of them a lot.
Sure,
they're great.
I love Back to the Future. I mean, you get some great characters and some. I mean, it's one of those quintessential movies of our childhood.
Sure.
I thought I heard recently in real life, didn't we just have the date in which Marty was brought to the future
to look after his 2015.
We're almost there, which is scary.
Oh, 2015. Okay. Yeah. I thought
it's every 30 years. It was 55, 85, and then 2015.
Yeah.
So we're edging up on it.
Which is going to be funny when we get there and we don't have hover boots.
Yeah, so I'm like, where's my hoverboard? Although, we're seeing some of this stuff now, and it's going to be fun to look back on it and go, well, what works now? People are still buying old DeLoreans and kidding them out,
And have I said on the Red Phone Zone yet how much I love Christopher Lloyd?
No.
I love Christopher Lloyd and about everything he does. Fucking Christopher fucking Lloyd almost at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe a Ruth Haas nominee.
Maybe.
Who knows?
I have a picture on my BlackBerry of a DeLorean with a personalized plate that says Gigawatt.
That's awesome.
Nice. Well, there's a guy in Kansas City that's got that has
the DeLorean?
A DeLorean.
I've seen that around,
And last year, AMC Theaters did a showing, a Back to the Future showing at the AMC 30. And they had two DeLoreans parked out front that were all kitted out and stuff. So that was a lot of fun to see. And I, in fact, just saw, like I said, people are still kitting out, buying these things and kitting them out. And I just saw a guy on Sci-Fi Wire had a big video on there about a guy who bought one, is tricking it out. All this remote control stuff, has a kit scanner on the front, remote control music to play. The doors will open automatically. I mean, people love this movie. And I love it too. It's great. Back to the Future is awesome.
And it's indicative of me, but I'm going to call the Back to the Future trilogy my number five. And I don't feel bad about it.
No.
I like all those movies almost equally.
Exactly. All right. Now we're to my number four.
Yep.
Is that about right? My number four is Again, we're going for game changers here, and say what you will about the movie, this one definitely changed things for the genre. It's The Day the Earth Stood Still in 1951, directed by Robert Wise.
Great movie.
Yeah, that's my number seven, actually.
Well, there you go. It is a, you know, what really can't I say about this movie? I mean, it's aliens come to Earth and say, straighten up, fly right, or our robots will destroy you. And it is definitely one of those movies that you'll always see on these types of lists because it has a good relevant point to make. And it's, I mean, easily a classic.
And it's another one of those films where science and scientists mm-hmm. had a prominent role.
Yeah.
The aliens come to Earth. They want to talk to they don't want to talk to all of our government leaders. They want to talk to all of our world scientists,
mm-hmm.
and have a world symposium, in Washington, D.C.
Right.
To basically take care of your planet, or as a police force, we're going to come and destroy you.
Yeah. And it's not a movie. I haven't seen it in a long time now, and I didn't see the Keanu Reeves remake. But it's a movie I think just sort of stays with you. It's fantastic. It has some great of the movies there at that point, especially in the early 50s, had the big atomic monsters or the aliens show up. And
with the day the Earth stood still, you have to say nothing else other than Klaatu, Barada, Nictu.
Or Klaatu, Barada.
which actually lends itself to that because, it was in the Army Darkness and they did mm-hmm. parody it. That goes a long way.
Star Wars even picked up on it. Return of Jedi, they had the characters.
On the skiff.
Yeah,
Jabba.
Well, John, what's your number four?
My number four is, pulling my list here, The War of the Worlds, 1953.
Thank God you were going to go with that Spielberg one. I adore Steven Spielberg, but God, that movie was not good.
He's done some dogs. No. He's done some bad movies.
Yeah. No, the original War of the Worlds. And one of the things I thought was game-changing and essential about this is a great example of taking a book and bringing it to film. The radio drama, the radio scare that was done was obviously much more true to the book because they were, tripods walking across the planet. But this was I liked how, and I don't know who made these decisions. I know it was directed by Byron Haskin, mm-hmm. and I don't know if it was the director that chose to do this, but, instead of making them tripods that were walking, which absolutely would have been, unless they went with Harryhausen style effects, which I know they didn't want to do, it would have been very difficult to, to make that come across believably on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So instead to have them as these, alien ships that hover and, have that alien design and the tri-eye, effect and everything. Fantastic. And I think it was it's an essential sci-fi.
I do love the War of the Worlds, although I don't think it's been a long time since I've seen that one.
Now, who did you say directed that? I'm sorry.
John, who directed that?
Byron Haskin.
Haskin.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that name.
It's 1953. Yeah.
And again, it's sort of indicative of that era. As you had the whole aliens coming in and doing their thing, and it of course goes back to like this one of the first science fiction stories. War of the Worlds, good stuff.
Yeah,
Aaron, what's your number four?
My number four is the 1997 Robert Zemeckis film Contact, starring Jodie Foster, Matthew McConaughey. I'm sitting here right now saying that I recognize and understand this is not a fantastically great film. I remember it very well from when it came out. I saw it in the theater.
I loved it.
And I enjoyed it quite a bit. And like I've said before, please bear in mind I've done this list twice in some capacity, so I'm grabbing at straws. I liked it a lot. There were things about it that weren't fantastic, but I could go to watch it again right now. And
I loved it. Yeah.
It was fun, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. It did a good job of a lot of the times when you're dealing with a movie that's dealing with science or you're dealing with a movie that's dealing with religion, they dismiss them. Mm-hmm. And Contact did not do that because you have the character of Jodie Foster, who was a scientist, and the character of McConaughey that was, I think he was a priest or some religious figure like that. And the two came to an understanding, which was nice, you know, in this world of religious extremists and people.
Well, and they had the real religious extremists in that film, too.
Sure.
That was doing the sabotaging and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I liked it. I saw it when I was, you know, I was 97. I was 16 years old, and I enjoyed it. I haven't seen it for a while, and I could totally go for watching it tonight.
I haven't seen it. I want to say I haven't seen it since it came out on video, since it came out in theaters.
And I don't want to pretend like, you know, I'm cool or anything. I had no idea Zemeckis directed it until, like, 2 minutes ago when I looked it up.
I had forgotten that he had directed it, but it does ring a bell now.
And that makes sense.
You know, Contact, I remember it was not a bad movie. I felt it was too long. But, again, I'm going off of 14 years ago when I saw it. So, I mean, I might need to view it again. And I sort of remember leaving it just sort of going, it was okay.
And I liked it because it's, you know, it's Carl Sagan's book and it's his idea of what aliens would be like and how they would contact us. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. I honestly, it was one of those, I liked the science in it, because it was, you know, accurate science and it was kind of interesting stuff to tell that, yeah, the first images, TV images that any aliens are going to see from us, are going to reach them are going to be of, you know, of the Olympics with Adolf Hitler and all that stuff. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. And the whole searching the stars and SETI and sort of looking into that one and the whole concept of the amount of stars out there. And it is a movie that really talks about the vastness of space and just how absolutely insanely huge outer space is. And how we're just a teeny tiny little speck in space, but out there there's a lot of space in space. I mean, that's why they call it space.
Shitload of it, yeah.
So anyone who goes off thinking that there's not intelligent life out there is just quite frankly an idiot because like they say in Contact, it'd be an awful waste of space.
It's not a great thing to say, but it's one of my favorite one of what's his name? David I can't remember his name now. The her father, the guy that played her father. That guy,
great character actor. Was in
David Morse.
Yeah, David Morse.
David Morse's roles.
Yeah.
And he plays
he can play
a very interesting character. But
well, he plays good characters in general. I mean, he could play this fatherly nice guy and turn around and play this evil, dirty son of a bitch.
Like
know?
Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yeah.
He was a dirty, evil son of a bitch in that. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed his character a lot.
I think he's definitely an underrated actor.
Stuff like
yeah.
that. Sure, he's real good. Yeah.
I think we're on to my number three.
Sure.
All right, well, my number three is one I've previously mentioned, and I had to mention it again because it's
that
sure
good?
Brilliance and awesomeness, and it obviously changed the genre. It was Metropolis, directed by Fritz Lang. It was 19... I wrote down the wrong date.
27,
it's
20, isn't it?
I think
it
was
1927.
Yeah,
it's my number 10. Inverted
numbers. It's not on my list, but it seems like it was 27.
I mean, they keep finding more stuff to add to this movie. And
it never hurts it.
It never hurts it. I mean, yes, the movie's long as it is, but the movie has so much greatness in it. And it has a great story, has a great message to it. And for being a movie made in 1927, the visual effects are absolutely amazing.
Sure.
And, I mean, it's the first time you sort of get this epic, grandiose science fiction tale that is told to you, and it's just this huge film. But that's why I put it in at my number three, because, I mean, it came out, and people still go back and reference it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how 70 years later, they're still going, well, back in Metropolis, this happened. You know, it's like, well, how many times do you see big robots, whatnot, always sort of going back and being referenced to the robot Metropolis?
Yeah.
Its footprint is huge and we're still standing in its shadow.
Yeah, absolutely undeniable.
But that's Metropolis.
So we're on to my number three now, huh?
We're on to John's number
three. Oh, excuse me. John's number
my
three.
Number three.
Good, I don't talk anyway.
My number three is 1977's Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Now, this motherfucker sitting to my left hates that movie.
Can't stand that movie.
I don't get it.
Ugh.
I think it's a very sweet movie. And
it's awesome.
It's such a nice movie in the fact that the aliens didn't show up to kill us and eat our dogs and stick anal probes up us.
Well, it's not a nice movie like E.T. nice.
No, no.
You know, it's not gentle like that. It's
believably
definitely
nice.
A movie. It's a movie of wonderment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a movie where, you know, I mean, because the aliens, we don't know what their intentions were. I mean, you know, Richard Dreyfuss gets burned when he looks up at one, and they are stealing people.
Sure.
But I mean, the sense of wonder that's put in that film when an entire squadron of fighter planes from, I think, World War II suddenly show up in the desert. You know, and there's a ship in a desert, you know, and all these things that they've just been depositing, because since they travel faster than light, they grab them, zip through space, and then come back, and it's years later. You know, it's just, I just loved it, and I love the sense of global community. You know, we all had to kind of come together to investigate this, you know, mysterious out of world mystery. You know, the head person was French, you know, and needed an interpreter, you know, and it was just I think it's just one of the best films out there. And it's an essential sci-fi. I think anybody that is a fan of sci-fi needs to know and see Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
And I'm agreeing with you in the fact that it's a very unique sci-fi film, in the fact that aliens show up not to kick our ass. I mean, it was genuinely for communication. A little bit more going on there, but it wasn't, you know, flat out, you know, take over the world, muah-ha-ha-ha-ha kind of stuff. And
yeah.
That's what I enjoyed about it. That's what I enjoyed about it.
I recognize its impact. I couldn't stand it. I've seen it three or four times trying to like it, and I sort of get hung up on the fact that it's movie feels like it's 9 hours long and nothing happens.
It's okay to be wrong, Ethan. It's all right.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta be used to it.
That's good to comfort
by
each
now.
Other like that, yes.
It's gotta be. I mean, you gotta
Somebody
be
needs
to
hug you with a hammer. It's all right.
Oh, that's good. That's
Absolutely.
Good. So, yeah, not one of my favorites, I'm afraid, guys. So.
That's cool. Speaking of being wrong, my number three is actually a movie that number three. It's a movie that's indicative of my feeling of sci-fi. Sci-fi is not a genre that grabs me often, but it can do it well. But right or wrong, you have to admit that there are some bad sci-fi movies, horrible sci-fi movies out there. And the general public consensus of the ones that they like, excuse me, stuff like Independence Day, just crap like that. It's just not good movies. And my number three is a movie that kind of makes fun of that in the fact that it doesn't take itself too seriously, but makes itself into an enjoyable movie. It's obviously the Tim Burton Mars Attacks. Excuse me, I got pretzels stuck in my throat.
Do not run, we are your friends.
Do not run, we are your friends. I enjoyed it a lot. Obviously, I understand that, you know, pretty much everything I've mentioned before this is a better film. And everything I mentioned past this is a better film, but very few of them have I enjoyed more. And, Do Not Run, We Are Your Friends, the double roles by Jack Nicholson. I mean, it's a fantastic, ensemble cast with really fun visual, really fun visual effects and, I enjoyed it, and especially considering like the entire premise of the movie is based off of a bunch of trading cards. I enjoyed it. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was fun.
The movie's a great throwback to those movies in the '50s. You know, I mean, just the look of the aliens and the whole, you know, Mars is attacking Mars.
Sure.
The whole Martian thing. It has a great sense of humor to it.
Very indicative of the '50s.
Oh yeah.
It's going to be Mars that took over the world, you know, kind of like, you know, Russia in the '80s, you know, like, It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed it too.
Yep, it's funny. I like it.
So cool.
All right, so we're up to my number two.
Yep.
All right, my number two. Speaking of movies that, movies that are not ones that I personally like per se, but and I might get, and it's no secret to those who's listened to the show about this one. But it's a movie that I sort of akin to the Rolling Stones. You don't have to like them, but you recognize that they had an impact on music. Same thing can be said for the Beatles. Of course, I'm talking about the 2001 A Space Odyssey, directed by Stanley Kubrick in 1968. The movie is boring. The movie is has a beginning that doesn't make sense, a middle that is pretty good, and an ending that just makes my brain hurt in the wrong way. But I can definitely recognize that it is a movie that has impact. It is something that changed science fiction from that point on. And it is just looking special effects wise, 2001 A Space Odyssey is a film that just, what came after it, the movies that came after it weren't possible until this movie came out.
What was that, 75?
I 68.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. 68. Yep. In fact, that's my number nine. Yep, yeah. I agree.
It is not a movie I like to watch.
I'm glad I've seen it.
Yeah.
Don't want to watch it again.
Yeah, it is a movie I'm glad I have seen. I don't need to see it again. It's, you know, it's like, yes. It has its place in history. It has its place amidst science fiction. I want to go watch a movie where I can actually enjoy myself. Thanks.
I think that's why it's a quintessential essential. You know, you just only have to see it the one time, get it under your belt, and it'll stick with you. It'll stick with you. It's good. But yeah, only the one time is good.
I think it's one of those. You know, I think Ethan nailed it. I mean, it's one of those essential ones you need to watch if you want to call yourself a movie fan, a film fan, but I personally don't find it that enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
Personally, but you know, I'm not gonna fault anyone that really enjoys it quite a bit.
So. Man, I enjoyed 2010 much more than 2001.
See, that, I haven't seen that one.
Did not do it for me at all.
And that was directed by Peter Hyams, I think.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that one. That was the one with Roy Scheider, I believe.
He was Jaws.
He was. We're gonna need a bigger boat.
I like Jaws.
And we need a bigger spaceship.
Jaws in space.
In space.
Fun stuff.
So you know, 2001. It's a movie that has that has obvious historical significance. It is very much part of movie history. And
you can't get no satisfaction.
And it made huge strides in special effects.
Sure.
You know, and just like you just couldn't believe it was 1968 when it was made. The effects in it are really good for 1968.
Sure.
So, that's my number two. John, what's your number two?
My number two is Lightning in a Bottle. It is Steven Spielberg's E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Yeah,
that one is
not on my list, but I had it on my post.
It's my number seven.
Sure. Yeah, this is a fantastic film because it really captures childhood wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it in two characters for sure. Elliot, of course, but then also the guy that was just known as Mr. Keys, because he carried childhood wonder with him his entire life into adulthood and made it his life's work to seek out alien life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one, it comes across so clearly when he's talking to Elliot and he says, I'm glad that he came to you and met you first, you know?
Yeah.
Because Keys, you know, the character Keys, he's the one who would, obviously he was wishing that it would be him, but it wasn't, you know? And so he's glad that it was somebody else with that same kind of sense of wonder that he has, which is Elliot, you know? But it's an amazing film. I take a little bit of offense that Spielberg felt like he had to change it with that 20th anniversary. I mean, come on.
Now,
seriously? Really?
I'm not going to ask you the question, but you look to be about the same age as Ethan and I-ish. I want to see what you think of the fact that... What did that movie come out? 82?
E.T. came out in 82.
Yeah. 82. So that means I was 4 to 3 when that movie came out. I did not see that movie until I was 17.
Figure that one out.
Yeah. It is. I got grounded, so I wasn't allowed to see it, and then it just didn't happen. You got to bear in mind, those are the days before VCR.
Yeah.
And I did not see that movie until I was 17.
It is actually, and you say that, and it's actually one of my earliest memories, and it's quite possibly the first movie I remember seeing in the movie theater.
Well, it came out when I was 16 years old. Well, I was probably 15 at the time, since I have a November birthday.
So
But it came out when I was 15. I saw it when it was brand. You know, I saw it right when it came out. So
that would have been awesome.
And I think exactly what you said, John, is I mean, the movie is wonderment, and it is this childhood.
They don't make enough movies like this anymore.
No, it's absolutely lightning in a bottle. It's never been recaptured, in my opinion. It's never been recaptured to that level, even by Steven Spielberg. He outdid himself, and I think he's always been chasing that kid on a bicycle crossing across the moon. He's been chasing that kid for the rest of his life, and he hasn't been able to do it yet.
It's great.
I mean, come close.
I have my fingers crossed. I mean, this is sort of off topic, but I just saw the trailer for Super 8.
I want it to be as good.
And it really reminds me the feeling of the trailer, the feeling of what it looks like to be in the movie. It reminds me of E.T. It's the first thing
I was seeing that
trailer. I was like, this feels like a 1980s Spielberg movie.
Over on Bag and Boardcast, we did a movie poll thing where we guessed what we think is going to be the top movie of the summer. And I think all of us unanimously agree that it's going to be Harry Potter. I want all of us to be wrong, and I want Super 8 to be like that movie that's like a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
Because
Super 8 is going to be amazing.
I hope it's going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. Out of all the movies that we were talking about, it's the one I'm most curious about. I said something to Ethan about it, to where I was watching the trailer, and my instinct was, wow, this looks like, you know, Close Encounters. It looks like E.T. And then, like, the screen credit came up from executive producer Steven Spielberg. We're like, well, shit, no wonder it looks like that.
Yeah.
And, God, I hope this is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, and
J.J. Abrams is directing it.
Going back to E.T., the best thing I can say is it sort of captures that movie magic, you know, that childhood wonder, that movie magic that you go to see the movies with your parents, with your kids. And you know, E.T. is just one of those timeless classics that goes on. I mean, we were just talking about aliens coming to Earth and not wanting to kill us. You know, I mean, yet another Spielberg movie that does this, but this one has where instead of the first person that the alien meets being, you know, Mr. Scientist guy, it's just a little kid.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and unlike the aliens that Spielberg did in Close Encounters, you know, that are, you know, looking at technology and they're looking at people and they're collecting these things. These were botanists. ETs were botanists. They came to look at our plants, you know, and they just want to come in quietly, look at our plants and go away because they're completely harmless, you know, and there's just, I don't know. There's something magical about E.T. that just cannot be and hasn't been introduced, but hopefully it can be.
I think magical is the perfect term for
that movie. Absolutely. Fantastic.
I love
beautiful, sweet little movie that does not happen nearly often.
Nope. Aaron, what's your number?
I can't wait to introduce my son to it.
That would be, you know, and,
That will definitely be a treat.
I'm looking forward to showing it to my girlfriend's daughter. You have no idea how much fun it was to show her The Wizard of Oz. E.T. is going to be just as much fun.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because I really
prepared for tears.
I really feel like I was Elliot when I saw it, and I feel like I'm Keys now. Mm-hmm. And I want to introduce him to my son so that he can feel like he's Elliot, and he can have that same path.
That's a great analogy. Well, Aaron, what is your number two?
Well, my number two is a movie that, you know, I've been kind of like, you know, thumbing my nose at the fact we're doing sci-fi for a third time. But it's one that I forgot about doing my list second time. It's a movie I like a lot, and I think it showed up on Ethan's list last week. It's not 1996, but it was Children of Men.
That's a great movie.
Alfonso Cuarón. What can be said about that movie that somebody as inarticulate as me?
It goes back to good science fiction. It goes back to science fiction that has a moral, has a point, and has some social commentary in it.
Yeah.
And it's science fiction without it being the science being too flashy. You know, there's no giant spaceships. There's no, oh, the bombs have all dropped. It's like, no, it's set in the future where something has made everyone sterile. We're not going to get into that. Anyway, here's the story. That is the important part of the movie. Yeah, it's Children of Men's great. Like I said, I think it harkens back to those movies that we talked about in the pre-Star Wars sci-fi. You know, we're talking Rollerball. We're talking Planet of the Apes. I mean, that dystopian science fiction.
Great understated performance by Clive Owen.
Oh, yeah.
Great performance. I don't have a whole lot to say about it, but I just think it's a fantastic movie that it's rarely duplicated. Rarely duplicated at all.
I have not had the opportunity to see that yet, but I definitely want to.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
It's a good one.
I just got the Netflix email, come back to us for free for a month. So I'll see if it's available as streaming, and I'll watch it.
If it's not, man, I'll loan you the DVD.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Do you have that DVD?
Yes, I do.
If you loan it to him, you should maybe let me borrow it. I haven't seen it
maybe
for a while.
I found it on clearance for $2.
Worth everything.
I'm more trustworthy than you, Aaron.
Well, that's probably true.
You are. That is true. Well, I guess we're to my number one. My number one is one that Aaron will probably argue with me over because he likes to argue. But you can't.
Not on Instant Stream.
Wow, that's too bad.
Children of Men.
Well, this movie is one that no one will ever question that it changed the face of science fiction because we built shows around it. It's Star Wars, 1977, directed by George Lucas.
Why would I argue about that?
Because you like arguing. Star Wars came out and it changed science fiction. It made science fiction sci-fi. It made the science fiction blockbuster. It made it a viable. It made it so studios would actually take science fiction serious as a moneymaker rather than a, oh yeah, we'll do this little be real, you know, type of movie about, you know, apes taking over the world or something like that. Said, no, we're going to put this movie out and it's going to make money hand over fist. I love Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars is just one of those fun movies that you can watch and be entertained with. And, you know, that what's more to say about it? I mean, its impact is evident.
Yeah, motherfucking Star Wars. I mean, we did two shows prior to this, pre-Star Wars and post-Star Wars. Now this is overall sci-fi, and it just feels like it should probably be at least considered to be part of these
lists. I mean, if you consider all of these movies I've been talking about, ripple points in the whole Star in the whole science fiction
Star Wars is a bomb.
Star Wars is like a giant boulder falling in that pool. I mean, it's a tidal wave coming in.
Absolutely.
So I mean,
I love Star Wars.
Yeah. Oh no, you hate it. You can't stand it.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah. What more can I say about it? It's Star Wars. I mean, that's sort of, you know, it's Batman. It's Star Wars. Yeah. You know?
I mean, it's fantastic. I'm not going to disagree with you.
That's my number one.
Cool. Not a bad one.
Not a bad one.
No. Well, what's your number one, John?
My number one changed my life. 1979, Ridley Scott's Alien.
Mm-hmm. Good movie.
Amazing.
Showed up many times on my list in the past.
And it's one I consider to put on my list, but I mean, quite frankly, it's very much evident that movie came out because Star Wars was a huge hit. They greenlit Alien. I love Alien. Alien.
Well, and it's such the opposite coin of Star Wars. You know, in Alien, space is dangerous.
It's dirty. It's gritty. It's
dirty.
It's not fun.
In space, no one can hear you scream is the tagline.
Like,
you know,
on one side you have great swashbuckling adventure with blasters and stormtroopers and all this. On the other one, you got one alien that's so creepy and nasty and it'll cocoon you, and then things will pop out of your chest. And
yeah. Cool. Yeah. Chest burster. Face huggers and chest bursters. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in Alien, science is.
Speaking of a chest burster.
Yeah.
Woo!
Well timed, my friend. Well timed.
believe it or not, that was holding back.
Yes, he doesn't want to break the microphones.
No.
in Alien, the science in the space is just gritty. You know, it's you know, room filled computers again, and it's just, you know, really, really hardcore. In fact, I recently just read the Alan Dean Foster novel version.
I read that. That was fucked up. So good. Man, it was amazing. Fucked up, though.
Yeah, and, well, with Alien, what Star Wars did was, you know, it made science fiction a bankable thing. And yes, it presented a universe that seemed lived in. What Alien really did for me is it presented a universe that felt like it had been lived in for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that ship, and it was like, that's not glitzy, that's not glamorous.
And that's not new.
Yeah, and it's not aerodynamic because it doesn't have to be.
Yep.
It's, you know, you're running around in space. It's a big refinery in space that floats around, and, you know, I mean, you have these vast periods of time where you're not with anybody, you know, and I love Alien. I mean, it's on my it's definitely on my top six. It was on my top six of horror movies.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, because it's a grand film.
It almost showed up on my my post Star Wars sci-fi, and then somebody snaked it from me, so I threw Aliens on there instead. But I love the original Alien, great movie, and I think Ridley Scott might have showed up on my top six favorite directors of all time because I think he's great.
He's amazing.
I love him. Nine times out of ten, he does great movies. Yeah.
And created a perfect gritty universe. It was awesome.
Yeah, cool. I mean, great movie.
I love Alien.
Great movie.
Love it. As I understand it, the Blu-ray is absolutely amazing.
So I've heard that as well. So, cool. I guess moving on to my number one, I'm going to be turning the tables on Ethan. Ethan is fond of saying to me, Aaron, what's my number one? Ethan, what's my number one?
Star Wars.
It's Empire. My favorite movie of all time is The Empire Strikes Back, and it just seems like a cop-out to me if I don't pick it as my favorite sci-fi movie of all time.
I guess you could say you picked the Back to the Future trilogy. I sort of, I could pretty much say mine's the Star Wars trilogy.
And when I was 20, I would have argued and fought and kicked and bled and scratched and all that good stuff about why Empire is the better film over Star Wars. I don't have the energy or even the evidence for that anymore. I personally prefer The Empire Strikes Back over Star Wars, although I recognize the fact that I think that they're equally good movies. I think that Empire Strikes Back over Star Wars, for me, is the more interesting movie because of the fact that it just doesn't have the budgetary constraints that Star Wars had, in so much that, you know, they had to deal with what they had, which I understand has its artistic merits. I mean, dealing with what you have to deal with makes you have to come up with some interesting and creative things.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Empire Strikes Back, you know, like, the sky was the limit. And, you know, they were able to do anything that they fucking wanted to with that movie. I mean, they could use any amount of money. They could probably get damn near any actors that they wanted for any roles. And they still turned in a movie that was, you know, and I feel like I'm being diplomatic here. I think it's as good as the original Star Wars, A New Hope. But, you know, in my mind, it's better because of the fact that, you know, Star Wars is based off of Flash Gordon and all those great 50 serials and stuff like that. But Empire more had that feeling to it because, you know, Star Wars had a nice bow tied on it with the ceremony at the end of it. But, you know, with the end of Empire, you know, Luke had his hand cut off. You know, Han Solo was taken hostage, you know, all kinds of good stuff like that. And it really ended off with the serial feeling. And you also...
It ended with my favorite lightsaber fight.
Great lightsaber fight. And it's so hard to make people understand this, especially nowadays, especially with the prequels getting as much shit as they do. But just the way that that movie ended off with the fact that you didn't know if Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's father. You didn't know if Han Solo was going to live through what was going on. You didn't know what was going to be going on with Lando, if he was a turncoat or if, you know, he was just beleaguered by the situation. And it really made you hunger and thirst for the Return of the Jedi. And that's what
When did that come out? 81?
1980. Mm-hmm. 3 years after 77, so 1980. Yep. I love that movie. Love that movie. And, you know, if you give me an inch, I'm going to argue with you that, you know, whether it's, you know, if it's sci-fi or if it's, you know, fantasy or anything like that. But, you know, it is sci-fi and it is fantasy and it's, you know, drama and it's all that good stuff. And it's just, I am in love with, you know, Star Wars as a whole. Empire is my favorite one of the, It's my favorite one of the chapters because to me it just feels like there's the most at stake. And whether or not, you know, they followed through with it in Return of the Jedi or anything, it's not Empire's fault because I like where it left me off. And it's my favorite movie of all time. So
I'll tell you, when I was a kid, you know, growing up in Texas, when Star Wars in 77, when it was coming out, I think I was, well, you know, I would have been 9 years old at the time. There was a commercial for Star Wars, and I told my dad, I said, I want to go see that movie. And I remember my dad going, it's probably not going to be very good. He ended up being a huge fan of Star Wars. In 1980, I was 12 years old. Me, and this is, of course, this
1980?
Predated.
I was like sperm. So
you were just born.
Barely past sperm. I envy you. But you know, please, I'm sorry, continue.
This predates midnight releases.
Sure.
And so me and my friends, we all went and we camped out overnight for a first showing of Empire Strikes Back. And that was that's the only time I've ever spent the night at a theater all night long, camping out, waiting for a ticket.
Yeah, well, that's before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's you know.
Oh, I had the pleasure of waiting 14 hours in the rain for tickets to Star Wars Episode One. So.
Same with me, but then the internet was.
Yep. Then you could get advanced tickets on the internet,
which is nice. But, you know, and I don't know if I've made it clear enough in the past on the show, but in my mind, I understand that Star Wars and Empire are practically equal, but. Just, you know, in my heart, I prefer Empire, and don't let that take away from A New Hope.
Sure.
I love the Empire. I mean, the poster sitting over there, for love of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't own a lot of posters.
So that is an awesome poster.
It's a pretty poster. But yeah, my number one easily is The Empire Strikes Back. At this point, I think that's going to lead us into naming off our top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
John, what's your top 10 list of your favorite sci-fi movies?
Well, three of my four were already covered. 10 was Metropolis, 1927. My number 9 is 2001, A Space Odyssey. My number 8, we didn't talk about, is The Time Machine, 1960,
mm-hmm.
directed
Fun
by
movie.
George Pal. Yep, fantastic
what, not
movie.
Not the remake? Oh.
You know, and again, this is another H.G. Wells book brought to film, really done well. I really love Time Machine. 7 is The Day the Earth Stood Still. And then my top 6 is Jason and the Argonauts for 6. Number 5 is Forbidden Planet. 4 is The War of the Worlds. 3, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. 2, E.T., The Extraterrestrial. And my number 1 is Alien.
Excellent. Ethan, top 10.
Well, my number 10 is one I've talked about before. It's the 2009 District 9. Number 9 is 1982's Tron. Again, we're getting into movies that I say change the genre. So my number 8 is the 1999 Matrix. Number 7 is E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Number 6 is Jurassic Park. Number 5, Avatar. Number 4, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Number 3, Metropolis. Number 2, 2001, A Space Odyssey. And number 1, Star Wars.
Cool. Well, we get into my number 10, and bearing in mind, this is a list of sci-fi films that I have seen, and I did not hate. My number 10 is John Carpenter's Escape from New York. My number 9 is Neil Blomkamp's District 9. My number 8 is Kathryn Bigelow's Strange Days. My number 7 is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind by none other than Michel Gondry, which brings me down to my top 6, which was Jurassic Park, Steven Spielberg. My number 5 is Robert Zemeckis' Back to the Future. My number 4 is Robert Zemeckis' Contact. My number 3, being Tim Burton's Mars Attacks. My number 2 being, Alfonso Cuarón's is Children of Men, and my number 1 being Irvin Kershner's 1980 Empire Strikes Back. And that is the end of our top 10 lists. I think that was an awful lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was so hard to keep it down to 10 because there's so many things I wanted to throw in there, like any of the giant rubber suit Godzilla movies.
We sort of have a leg up on you because we've done essentially this list two times already.
Exactly.
So it's like, oh, I've already talked about that one, so I don't need to talk about that. I've already talked about it.
It was pretty fun to be able to steal from Ethan and say, yeah, I like District 9. So, I mean, it was. But, you know, we do have a leg up on you, but it's not an easy – I've never done an easy top 10 list.
No.
I mean, it's so tough. It's a tough thing to do. Very tough thing to do. But stay tuned. We'll be right back with our outro section. Outro section. This has been issue number 52.
They're exploring foreign languages in this episode.
Yeah, I'm all right.
The next episode will be entirely in Esperanto.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that 3.4 GPA makes me like too big for my britches or some shit. But yeah, this time around we did our typical geekly happenings where we talked too much about stuff that didn't need it. And then after that, we had an ongoing movie genre discussion where this time around, John Hook chose the sci-fi genre as a whole, and we gave out our top six choices in that. I've been dreading this list since I saw I had to do it, because we've done sci-fi twice in the past. Had a lot of fun doing it, had a lot of fun discussing it, so thank you for that, John.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Hey, it's always fun to have somebody on here that's a lover of films. I always give people the opportunity to pimp any kind of thing that they choose to do. Do you have anything you need to pimp out of your web presence?
You know, I don't really have a web presence, so no, I have nothing to pimp out.
Hey, at least you're honest about it.
You are going to be running some games at some convention coming up, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Yes, CanCon.
That's not a real convention.
Yeah.
It is so.
I'm going to be running a board game on Friday night,
Chutes and Ladders,
board games on Saturday, and a role-playing game Saturday.
Shots and Ladders.
You're going to be running that Conan game that Friday night, right?
No, I'm going to do Mansions of Madness Friday night.
When are you doing Conan, if you're doing Conan?
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, all right.
Saturday morning. I'm doing Space Hulk Saturday afternoon, and I'm doing Call of Cthulhu, an adventure that I'm writing, Saturday night.
Nice. All right. Well, that's CanCon, July 8th through the 10th this year. Just said I'll plug something.
There you go.
But I suppose, as you all might have guessed, I lied last week. I said Sean Preston was going to be on this week, and I was looking at the wrong line. So my apologies to you, Mr. John Hook, for thinking you were Sean Preston.
John's the asshole, not Ethan. I'm sorry.
Ethan's the asshole. Right.
God damn, that's a slip.
I have confirmed it. I triple checked that I looked at the right line.
Sean Preston.
This next week we have Mr. Sean Preston.
At least it's not a John or a Chris.
That's true. We have a Sean now. Sean Preston from Reality Blurs Games, and they're the people who publish Savage Worlds and Call of Cthulhu licensed products. Agents of Oblivion, Iron Dynasty, and Realms of Cthulhu. Sean's a great guy, does some good stuff. I don't know the topic yet, but he's going to be letting me know. He hasn't sent me his top three yet. He wanted to mull over the list.
Sci-fi.
I know.
It's going to be something sci-fi.
He's going to send me a top three. We'll see what's on there. So, okay. And we will have something to talk about next week. So, but I'll let you know as soon as I know.
Cool.
Yeah, Sean Preston from Alley Blurs Games is going to be on. We are looking forward to having, I'm close to nailing down a date with, John Rogers and, Robin Laws. And,
what's your fiance think about you with all these dates? And then?
She's fine with it, apparently. No.
That's hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What can I say?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Oh, and big congrats to you and Beth, Ethan.
Oh, thank you.
Beth's a sweetheart. I hope that Ethan doesn't fuck her up.
No, I hope not to.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But yeah, I guess tonight's Aaron drunkenness has been brought to us by the Bag to Board cast. And I mean, big old box of beer. Lots of bees in that sense. But yeah, good beer. I like it. Your room.
It's a bagged and board box of beer.
Beer. Bagged and board box of beer from those bitches from Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Yeah, bagged and board box of beer from those bitches in Buffalo. I like it.
And he said that all without tripping over his own words.
Yeah, you can see the above. Pretty awesome. But until next week, I guess that makes me Aaron.
I guess that makes me Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly. Smoof.
Smoof.
Smoof.